9:36, Dean Richards, Sunday morning, WGN. The point of the program where we always talk all things COVID-19. And so nice to have with us today Dr. Robert Murphy, Professor of Infectious Diseases, Northwestern's Feinberg School of Medicine. Dr. Murphy, nice to talk to you again. How are you, my friend?
Hey, good morning.
You can see Dr. Murphy every morning just after 7 o'clock on the WGN TV Morning News, offering up great information. And by the way, happy birthday this week.
Thank you very much.
I noticed there was a big Dr. Murphy birthday celebration that went on.
Yeah, we had quite a party there.
Oh, good. That's good. So good to know that that can still go on during these trying days in which we're living. So
yeah, we have to remember what's important.
Yeah, I had a big conversation yesterday with somebody about forgetting about, you know, what's normal and how we used to live and what we used to do. It's not really that long ago, but it seems like forever ago that we were able to do things, you know, like blow out candles and
exactly, you
know, not fear for spitting all over the cake. So today is the first Bears game of, you know, during this era of the season.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, while there won't be the same crowds in the stadiums in Detroit at Ford Field, there will be people there. Presumably there will be people in the parking lot and tailgating and things like that. Do you have concerns about that?
Well, you know, it's all about density. It's not so much how many people. I mean, if you look at Soldier Field, Soldier Field holds 63,000 people. That would be like one of the biggest cities in Illinois, actually.
Yeah, right.
You know, I mean, if you put 5,000 people in there, the place would look empty. They certainly have enough room to do something in there and in the parking lots that's safe.
Yeah, my concern, because, I was watching some highlights of games over the past couple of days, and while the players seemed somewhat socially distanced, more than usual, in the stands, in the parking lots where the parties were going on, and, you know, beers were flowing, inhibitions were, you know, went down, and things didn't look so safe, just, you know, by my nosy mm-hmm. eye.
Well, you know, for the players is one thing, the fans are another thing. The fans have to stay isolated with the group that they came from, and they have to be limited in the stadium where they can go. In other words, they can't go anywhere in the stadium, and they can't change their seats. There's some things that they can do that make sense in terms of transmitting the virus. The players and the staff are really another whole entity altogether, and they've got to have very frequent testing. The players are getting tested essentially every day, is from what I've heard. And, you know, that's because they can't socially distance if you play contact sports.
Sure.
That's happening, and so far, so good.
I wonder what your concern. Do you have concerns about you know, players who are face to face, high contact? You know,
well, they're getting tested now. So the problem is the test doesn't turn positive on day one. It takes 3 or 4 days after the exposure to occur, so they could miss a few. You know, and then that could cause another whole mini epidemic. But, you know, the NFL is, and the other sports leagues are very aware of this. And they're testing the players almost daily.
Okay. All right. Vaccine.
So it's all about, but the point is, you bring up a good point. It's about lowering the risk to something that's acceptable. There is never going to be no risk, unfortunately, using a double negative. Yeah, no risk doesn't exist. There's a risk. Every time you walk out the door, there's a potential risk.
Right.
So, you know, how do you lower that as much as possible?
Makes sense. All right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Let's get the what's the latest on the vaccine? Because, you know, I've heard lots of different stories. One about a vaccine study that was halted.
Right.
Another that resumed after being halted. Where are we with some of this?
Yeah, so there's 144 vaccines in development. 8 of them have reached what they call phase 3. That means they're getting into the 30,000 person size of a study, which is really what you need to do for to prove not only efficacy, but safety. And typically you have at least 3,000 people who have taken the vaccine for a year before these things are improved, which would mean that this would be, second quarter 2021. Mm. But, who knows what's going to happen. The vaccine trial that you're talking about is the Oxford AstraZeneca vaccine that was the furthest along of all the vaccines. They had a case in the summer of a study subject who developed multiple sclerosis, neurologic condition, and they did stop the study then. They determined that it was not related to the vaccine, and they continued on. Then they had a patient about 2 weeks ago who had transverse myelitis. This is an inflammation around the spinal cord that can paralyze you. It stops all the nerves from working below where the myelitis is occurring. This can be quite serious and can last a long time. Some people never get better. Some people get completely better. It's a whole spectrum. So when that happened, and it turned out that patient was in the United Kingdom, and was the vaccine. It wasn't the placebo. And they stopped the study and investigated it. There's an independent safety monitoring board that looks at all the data. They reviewed everything. The patient is actually doing well, and I think is either leaving the hospital shortly or has just left, and they've restarted the study.
Does that mean that they felt like the myelitis was not a cause of the vaccine?
Well, because in the United States, anyway, the data on myelitis is that there's 1,400 cases per year that happen. They're often related to a viral infection. Rarely they've been associated with getting a vaccine. So, it's a concern. But the independent board has decided that they can't come to the conclusion that this thing actually was caused by the vaccine itself. I don't have any more details on that. That's just what I've been reading in the press releases.
Yeah.
But, they went through the process. They did everything right. They identified the patient. They made it all public. They stopped the study. They investigated it. They came to the conclusion that this is an independent group, that it was okay to continue, and it is continuing.
Interestingly, on that Oxford AstraZeneca vaccine that's going on, the trial,
right.
I learned this morning on Andrew Lloyd Webber's website, famous composer, that he was one of the people who took the vaccine.
Yeah. It's started in the United Kingdom. And the only reason they went outside of the United Kingdom, because it's now being studied in South Africa and the United States and in some other places, is that the rate of infections in the United Kingdom dropped so low that they didn't think they would have enough evidence to show that it worked.
Yeah.
So they had to take it to places that are somewhat out of control, like the United States and South Africa. So, I'm not surprised. he would certainly be a candidate.
He's 72 years old, and he issued a statement saying that he has taken the COVID-19 vaccine developed by University of Oxford in the UK in collaboration with the biopharmaceutical company AstraZeneca. Lots of other scientific stuff that he says there. And he said in it that he had some mild after effects, but that he's doing fine. Is that something that you might expect for somebody taking a vaccine like that?
Yeah. You have typically some, if you've ever had a tetanus shot or measles, mumps, rubella, or even a flu shot, sometimes you get some aches and pains.
Yeah.
Afterwards, they're relatively mild, and they typically go away in 1 or 2 days. That's very typical. That's basically an injection site reaction and some mild inflammatory type symptoms. That's normal. It happens, and that doesn't mean anything long term. The problem is later with these neurologic things. Like I don't know if you remember or have read about the swine flu vaccine. So this was back during the Jimmy Carter era, and they thought it was going to be a really bad flu, and there would be all these deaths, and so they rushed the vaccine, And it turned out to be associated with Guillain-Barré syndrome,
right,
another neurologic syndrome that causes paralysis. And some 240 people, I think, had very serious complications and either had really serious long-term complications or died.
Yeah, I do recall.
You know, that was unfortunate, but I don't know if they would have picked that up if they had delayed or not. But, you know, there are these neurologic effects that can occur from these vaccines.
9:50 with Dean Richards, Sunday morning on WGN. And Dr. Robert Murphy joining us today, a professor of infectious diseases, Northwestern University's Feinberg School of Medicine. And you see him every morning just after 7 a.m. on the WGN TV morning news. And, Dr., people have been texting in questions, a variety of questions about their kids going back to school. One question, for example, my kids have gone back in person to school for at least part of the day. I'm more concerned with their time outside at recess. What precautions should they be taking?
Well, no, this is the whole thing about school. This is the risk that kids want to get outside. They want to exercise. That's a very important part of the whole educational process. And the schools have to do the best they can to try to keep the kids apart during that recess or athletic session. It's going to be a challenge to do it, but they've got to try. The risk, of course, is that they're going to get infected, spread it around, and bring it home. And it starts the whole thing going again.
Is there concern for the kids themselves testing positive, getting the infection, or is the concern greater for bringing it home for parents, grandparents, et cetera?
Well, children typically have a milder course of the disease. However, some of them end up in the hospital, some of them end up in the ICU, and some of them have even died from this infection. And there's this mysterious inflammatory syndrome that's associated with COVID and children. It's pretty rare, but it's quite serious. So it's not like they don't get sick and can't die from it. However, the biggest problem is that they spread it into the families and that some of the family members are at more at high risk, which is anybody 70 and older, like Andrew Lloyd Webber, or, you know, grandma, grandpa, whatever, and other elderly relatives, or anybody who has an underlying condition, such as cancer that's been treated or being treated, or diabetes, or even high blood pressure, or any kind of heart or lung disease.
We've been getting this question the past several weeks. Should I get a flu shot right now? Here's one that says, are flu shots even available in doctor's offices? We hear that they're going to pharmacies and first responders first.
Well, they're available. Where they're available, I don't know. I know our hospital has it, but excuse me. Definitely take a flu shot because this fall is going to be a disaster with the COVID on top of the influenza. It's really going to be a nightmare trying to figure out what's going on with people with all these respiratory illnesses. So definitely take the flu shot as soon as possible.
Someone had offered the idea that the influenza would be lowered this year because so many people are wearing masks and taking precautions that they probably have not taken in the past, and influenza was passed a little easier. Do you think that's true?
Well, you know, that's a fascinating hypothesis that, you know, maybe influenza will be less because everybody is, most people are being more cautious. However, if you look around, you see a lot of people are not being cautious.
Right. Yep.
A lot of people are not wearing masks. You go on the CTA or the Metro, there's a lot of people not wearing masks. And, you know, if everybody was doing that, I would say this hypothesis is most likely to be true. But we still don't have the discipline in this state to have that play out in the right direction. They're doing much better on the East Coast now. New Jersey, yep. New York, Massachusetts, Connecticut, Rhode Island, Vermont, and Maine all have really low rates. And the people there, I can just tell you from just looking at pictures, pretty much are obeying the mask rules. And the mask rules are enforced there. I know that.
I've noticed this week, I've seen a lot of people wearing a mask but not covering their nose. Should both their nose and mouth be covered?
Yes. It's almost stupid to have the mask if you're not going to wear it properly. The virus is actually concentrated in the nose area. That's where you get it, and that's where you spread it. It's in the back of the mouth, but it's primarily in the nasal passages, in the passages down the throat in the back. So the nose is a very important thing to keep covered up in this thing.
So I should start giving people who aren't wearing their masks properly dirty looks then. I do
it. Wear your mask properly.
I do it. If you come around me, you're not wearing your mask properly. Expect a dirty look.
Well, they're putting everybody around them at risk.
I know. That's the thing about it. This is Jim and Dixon for Dr. Robert Murphy.
Hi, Doctor. I'm a pharmacist, and I'm curious about the storage requirements on the AstraZeneca vaccine that they're developing and being at like negative 94 degrees Fahrenheit. What's the practicality of that being available to everybody anyway?
Well, you know, I'm not familiar with the actual specs, but I would imagine typical for vaccines is they've got to keep it at a very low temperature while they're being stored. Once they get into the circulation, this is something I'm going to have to look up after this call. You know, they can be at refrigerated or regular freezer temperature for a period of time. So I don't think it's going to be quite as serious for you, you know, distributing the vaccine as what you're reading. I think that's more the longer term storage, but I have to check on that.
Plus, we have to find a vaccine that actually works. Also,
that's the most important thing.
Yeah, there's one thing. Here's Judy on WGN with Dr. Robert Murphy. Good morning.
Good morning, Dr. Murphy.
Good morning.
Just a clarification about when you said, you know, with flu season coming on top of COVID, and the problems that will cause. If patients are presenting to physicians or their ERs, we have tests for both of those. So wouldn't we be able to differentiate fairly early and be able to treat those patients?
You're right. We're going to have to be testing for both. Now, the problem, which is getting alleviated somewhat as we speak with these newer antigen tests that have come out, is that you can get the flu test back relatively quickly. I mean, like within an hour or so. You know, they have these rapid tests for flu. However, the rapid tests for COVID are just coming out now. There's four companies that make them, and so they're being distributed as we speak. But the regular PCR test that's being done, there's up to 7 days wait for the result. So, you know, that's too long to wait to make a diagnosis. They're going to have to be, if your flu is negative, you're going to have to be quarantined until you actually get a test result back. Now, like I said, these newer tests are coming. So, you know, hopefully within the next couple of weeks, those tests will be more readily available. And the results are in 15 minutes.
Dr. Robert Murphy, professor of infectious diseases, Northwestern's Feinberg School of Medicine. Great to talk to you, and we'll see you tomorrow morning on TV.
All right. See you then.
There's Dr. Murphy, who you can see every morning just after 7 on the WGN TV Morning News.